Malifo City, it's Friday Night Fowdown!
Welcome, everyone, to the second attempt at starting Friday Night Fowdown. Today is March 31st, 2017. Our fine combatants this evening are Victoria.
Hello.
Dave.
Howdy.
Mark. Mark.
Hello, I didn't hear my name. Dave.
God. Moving on. And Adam.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
Awesome. And I'm your TO, Doug. Let me get my timer all set up. We're going to get into the topics real quick here. Obviously, a bunch of topics that we all discuss in random order. We got the order all nice and set up. And then we will just yell at each other for a second time around. 1 hour on the clock. 13 hours? That's not right. And
I mean, we've had talk for 13 hours.
Mark, first topic isn't really a topic, just something I wanted to mention. The new FAQs came out, and they didn't really, you know, cause much of a stirring. There was a bit of a nerf to Anna Lovelace and a bit of a nerf following a very complicated path to Jackdaw, specifically using the bigger they are upgrade. Does anyone have any opinions on this whatsoever?
I don't play either one, so nope.
I think they're all quality of life stuff. I don't think that I think anybody who was trying to pull the Jackdaw stuff was trying to pull a thread in a rule set that is totally illegitimate, and if someone tried to pull it on me, I would have slapped them in the face and walked away. So the FAQ clarifies it, and huzzah, and congrats to Aaron for all of his awesomeness.
Ah, great. Dave?
No, I don't really have anything for it. It just looked like rule clarifications.
I mean, there's some significant changes from a perspective of plus one damage on number 72, but no changes from the perspective of myself. It's more of that I think the way people are reading stuff it was not correct. So FAQ clarifies it.
Hooray. Okay, next topic that we can actually, you know, talk about and whatnot. He's not actually recording. One second, we got a hold of Trey finally. We thought we had lost him. So, all right, welcome back, everyone. We actually got a hold of Trey Page, and now he's going to be participating with us. Say hi, Trey.
Hello, everyone.
All right. I almost said it. I almost said moving on. But now,
drink.
Moving on. Our actual topic worth discussing was a suggestion posted by Kyle Bodie of Skeletons and Stones. I think everyone knows who Kyle Bodie is.
Never heard of him. What does he do?
Kyle Bodie of Schemes and Stones.
You know what? If you don't know, if you don't know, just fuck off.
Don't tell people to fuck off out of the podcast.
I might bleep that out. I don't know. I don't care all that much. Kyle had some run-ins with some jokers that didn't turn out very well for him, and he suggested, or at least he posited the idea of changing how we handle jokers in the game of Malifaux. He suggested being able to discard cards to overwrite jokers that have done you wrong, so to speak. So he posted in a weird place, and his suggestion was that you could discard two cards to cheat a black joker flip on a duel. I mean, that you flip. You can discard two cards to treat a black joker that you flip for damage as weak damage. You can discard two cards to reduce red joker damage flipped against you as severe damage, and you can discard two cards to cheat against a red joker flip by your opponent. This got him a bit of flack from the community. I don't think it was really deserved. I think he was just throwing the idea out there and seeing what people thought. But I wanted to get everyone's opinions on what do you think about these sort of changes? Do you think they should happen or not? Who's the top of the key?
Turn one, first player is Dave.
Dave!
I'm not a huge fan of it, because then it would just further solidify the need for taking things like Arcane Reservoir or hiring Hannah or something to increase your hand size, just to potentially prevent this from happening. Not that that's already not being taken in general. Also, it would give more precedence for Ironside's upgrade she can take, guy that I never take and I don't know the name of.
Iron Determination?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yay, Doug, remembering something. Who's next?
Player 2 is you.
Oh, I'm next.
Doug is next.
Oh, thank you, printer. I know a lot of people are going to talk about the technicality of it, and obviously you would have to revamp a lot of how people work, because having additional cards is going to make you considerably more powerful. And stuff like Jacob Lynch being able to toss two cards and immediately get them back is kind of overpowered in this situation. My specific opinion, being not the meta-heavy person I am, is that in a fluff perspective, I don't like being able to mitigate the sort of swing and fickleness of fate that the Joker sort of imply on this game. I think it's Malifaux will choose fluff over being a meta-heavy game, and this just seems to be these sort of rules go towards meta than they do towards fluff.
Next up is Adam.
All right, well, I guess my answer is kind of general. I think that anybody who's offering up suggestions on a regular basis to so-called change the game isn't necessary. I think the game is actually so healthy right now that for anybody to offer up a suggestion, as Kyle suggested, is totally off from where we're at with the game. If he wants to make these differences, he should become a developer at Weird. And I don't think anybody should be making claims like this on a public forum. Honestly, it's an interesting discussion, but it's not a discussion that is warranted without context. And the way he presented it is not in a good forum and not in a good way. More specifically, I think that the fact that he is suggesting changing a core mechanic of the game would screw up a large amount of the upgrades and abilities and actions that a lot of models have in the game. One of the great things about Malifaux is that you can mitigate your luck. What he's suggesting here is to actually remove that. I know a lot of people have been saying that the fact that doing what he's talking about is actually enabling power tournament gamers, but I actually think it's actually catering more towards the non-tournament gamers. If you play Malifaux for long enough, you know that holding the Black Joker is one of the strongest things you can do, and having the Red Joker in your deck is one of the strongest things you can do. To have anything otherwise is kind of suggesting that, oh, hey, the Black Joker and the Red Joker don't actually matter in the game, and I can just hold some extra cards and chuck them away to change the effect. It's already a card game. It's not a dice game. Dice games in general have a lot of fluctuation on luck, and the card mechanic itself has less, because not that you can necessarily count cards. I mean, you could if you really want to get hardcore. But the idea that there's one really bad card and one really good card in the deck is probably enough for Malifaux, because its entire design principles are based off of that concept. I think it'll be interesting when we see the other side and how things come to fruition from that, and how they handle the card mechanic in general. But I think in Malifaux that what he suggested is actually not a good concept, purely from the fact that why would we change a core mechanic of the game that has been a design principle not only in this edition but previous editions? So I think it's not. I think not only is the concept a bad idea, I think that the discussion itself is a bad idea.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. Cool.
It looks like our voice is disconnected.
Are you guys hearing us?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay.
You're good. Okay. Sorry about that. Who's next?
Trey is last.
Last.
Mark.
Yeah, shouldn't be Mark. Last.
Sorry, Mark is next. My bad. Mark is next.
Okay. So, Mark is now?
Mark is now.
Alrighty then. I mean, it's part of the game. You have them in the deck, and you know that they're either, I mean, discard hand or deck. It's just, I don't know. It doesn't feel like it needs an Adam mechanic. Plus, it's going to provide a huge buff to anyone who could draw cards or hold extra cards.
Trey?
I suggested another change to the Jokers that I think is a little less core to the mechanics, and that was that the Jokers have to stay together. And so if one is played and the other is not, then the one that was played stays in this card pile. Because I think that allowing the cards, like everyone else has already said, changes way too much the mechanics of models, upgrades, everything else involved. And I think the mechanic is great in the game. Like Adam was saying, that it's basically a core mechanic, and having the deck of cards, you can kind of count how you're doing and how you're going to do on a general point of view. And you know that the Jokers are still in there or not in there, so that should help you decide what to do or not to do. But I'm sure that we've all had games where you flip Black Joker, Red Joker, or opponent does multiple times in a row, and it can ruin the game. But I think that's part of the fun of it, of trying to determine how to mitigate that.
All right, moving on to second round rebuttals. Anything else extra you want to say, Dave?
It's Dave.
Yes, Dave.
Not really.
Okay. I don't really have anything to say on this specific subject that hasn't already been covered, but I think it's okay to have discussions on how the game is played, even down to the core. What is Malifaux, its essence? And I think the Jokers are a part of that, or a big part of that. But it's okay to question it and to talk about it and to discuss it, even if you don't agree. But I think we're going through a period where people are being very, very protective of this game and how they see this game. And we should be able to discuss anything. If I say, you know, next week, it's like, I don't think Gremlins should be a faction. Let's just destroy them utterly and they shouldn't be in the game. We should be able to talk about that. I mean, most people will probably be telling me I'm wrong, but that's how I see it. Adam?
Yeah, I do think what you're saying is important, and I think that what Kyle is suggesting from a discussion standpoint is healthy for the game, but not in a public forum. There are ways to reach out to Weird's design team that are, and I mean, Weird in general is a very open development team. And not only to the point that, like, you have one person, they have had many people at Weird walking through, or I guess revolving through, the position of designer. And one thing I'll say is that the core concepts have really stuck to the game. I've been through first edition, second edition, first edition 1.5 and second edition, and I have seen some of the core things that I really love about this game stay and stick. I don't think that having conversations like this in a public forum is healthy, purely because there are a lot of people that don't understand some of the core reasons why the game is the way it is. And not from a purpose of, like, they're not intelligent enough, it's just purely from the fact that they're not involved with a lot of the development process. I could even say, suggest that I might be one of those people. Like, I and Kyle might be too. Anybody else out there might be. I think the idea that you know better than the design team is the way that it's presented. The way that some of these concepts are presented are of, I know better than the design team. Well, if you know better, present it to the design team. If they're going to implement it, let them implement it. You don't need to stand on a soapbox and, you know, scream from high hell that, oh, I think Jokers are bad or good or whatever, and all that kind of stuff. I think it's a fun conversation, but not in a public forum beyond your local game group, maybe your local discussion standpoint. So, because what it does is it actually plants a bad seed, and it plants an inaccurate representation of the state of the game, and it doesn't actually help or provide a healthy standpoint for the game. Malifaux is healthy. It doesn't need a lot of these changes. If it does need these changes, the design team is really intelligent, and they're able to identify and pick out and fix them. One thing that I really love about Weird, and actually a lot of the small skirmish games right now, and it's not just Weird, is if you actually have a conversation with their designers and send them relevant data to represent your standpoint, they will make a change. It might not be next week. It might not be tomorrow. It might not be in 6 months. It might be a year later. And it might not even be in the way that you want it. But the point is, these companies do want to actually make their game succeed. So they will take your input and try and make the game better for you. But I just don't think the way that it's being done is healthy for the community, I guess.
Okay. Mark, anything else?
No.
Trey, you're last.
Yeah, I agree with Doug that we should definitely discuss these all the time, everywhere, because like with other games, Hordes and Warhammer, people just complain constantly and it creates a negative atmosphere. But being able to discuss these on an open forum like A Weird Place, I think is really healthy, because you get people involved in the rules and discussing what could possibly change, and it's interesting. I like arguing. That's why I'm on a podcast.
Awesome.
Quick question. So do you think that conversation could be done in a more private forum that allows for more concise criticism and discussion? Because I do think there's a lot of drivel that comes in through just having these discussions on a more public forum. In a sense that there's input that is, let's say, 50% of it is junk, the other 50% is good. Is the 50% that is junk worth it, or should it all be privatized from a discussion standpoint? Should it be done in a private forum?
If you're asking me, my opinion is that it should be on a public forum, because if everyone feels like they have a say, then they're more involved in the game in general, and they have more input and payment potentially towards the company to make the game better overall, regardless of whether or not their opinion is good.
Okay.
My issue is mostly with civility. Really.
Definitely. People get way too defensive.
Although, if I'm being 100% honest, I think Kyle could maybe have worded it a little bit less. Well, no, he ends it with thoughts, so we'll try and have him on next week, and then he can talk about it himself, I think.
He can defend himself?
Yeah. I think that's what we'll try to do that. Yeah. If he's not going to do it on his own show or something. But we got to move on. We are wasting lots of time. We're not wasting it.
I do want to really quick throw out there that these discussions are part of having a community.
Yeah.
In a game like Malifaux.
Moving on!
Yeah, it's fine. I just...
Thank you. You're not on the list. All right, this was... I heard the specific topic on the Max Value podcast. Shout out to them, I guess. And then they went ahead and put it
they're
on...
They're a bunch of losers.
On A Weird Place. They went ahead and put the question out on A Weird Place. So if you haven't noticed, I'm getting a lot of this stuff from A Weird Place. It's nice. But they thought that having an ability to just ignore conditions put on you by opposing models is a bit too powerful in the game due to the schemes and due to the schemes that require you to do something like that, thus allowing like a Hamelin crew with a bunch of peons and ashes and dust and Nyx and just the models that rotate in and out that constantly get summon and sacrifice would basically make it impossible for someone to do things like Accusation, Tellum, or Mark for Death. So I guess the question was is that should they make all abilities that ignore conditions put on you from opposing models not include conditions from the schemes? So
Adam, go.
Yeah, Adam.
Alright. So this is a hot button issue for me. It's been one for since second edition came out, to be honest. I don't think there's a problem with Hamelin. I don't think there's a problem with ashes and dust. I think that what we're seeing right now is the fact that some of the spreads on the pools that can come available in any event make it seem like those models are really good, which yeah they are right now. There are some pools in the current 2017 scheme pool, scheme and strategy pool, that make it near impossible to play the game of Malifaux. And what I mean by that is the fact that you can have that whole bluffing element, right? There's enough schemes that can pop up that make condition application impossible against an outcast Hamlin crew. And that removes the element of surprise if you're playing Hamlin against anybody else, because they're like, oh, well, oh yeah, you took Talem? Well, you actually can't tail me because I'm Hamlin. So do I think that there is a problem? Yes. Do I think that there is a problem that cards need to get changed? No. I would actually like to see a general rule, and I think this is what's been advocated, and it's been advocated for years. It just only has become a hot-button issue more recently because of the spread on the scheme pool, that any conditions that are applied via scoring purposes cannot be ignored from abilities or any other interactions. So would I like to see that? Yes, I would like to make it so Hamlin is not immune to Talem, more or less. So, hey, I don't know how it's going to change. I don't think it's going to change. Hey, we're already, what was this? It's April next, tomorrow. We're already 4 months in. Does it really affect us that much? I don't know. I think that the tournament scene, that's the thing I love about Weird, is they have an evolving and changing tournament scene that they come out with new strategies and schemes every year. So, hey, it's a problem a little bit right now for Hamlin if you're facing him, but you just got to deal with it. And maybe it's going to change in the next 6 months.
Okay, I'm next. Yeah, I'm next on the list. I don't want to make the blanket statement about you can't any sort of scoring scheme does not get ignored by those abilities, because I'm an Ironsides player, and having that ability is one of the few things she's good at. And the thing about her, and I guess her alone, I'm not, does anyone else know real quick any of other masters or models that ignore conditions? Because there's Numb to the World on the guild. No one?
I do not. The only one I ever hear of all the time is Ashes and Dust.
Yeah. See, I mean, it's mitigatable with Ironsides. It's not impossible to score these things on her, because you just kill the mage, giving her the immunity. If there was some way to remove Debt to the Guild, I'd be totally cool with that. But it's annoying, and I hate to have cases where there's a negative play experience, and in the off chance you flip masks a 10 and a 9, and your opponent brings that Hamlin list, is like, oh great, whatever the fourth scheme is, and Claim Jump, that's all you can take. And he knows that. And that just sucks. But it's also a corner case. So, really, I think I would prefer it if it just affected Hamlin and Ashes and Dust. And not in a terrible way. Like, mayhaps you could put conditions on them, but you'd have to pay resources, a decent amount of resources to do so. So that it would be hard to score these things against them, but not impossible. That's my opinion. On to Dave.
Dave.
I haven't, since our meta doesn't really play a whole lot of Outcast, I really haven't seen Hamlin or Ashes and Dust for that matter, or really played much against Leviticus, which was beaten with a nerf bat last year with the schemes and strategies for Gaining Grounds 2016. So I don't really have a strong dog in this fight. It's just more of a, it does kind of suck. It limits your opponent's pool, but at the same time, it shouldn't come up that often. And if it does, maybe even think about errata, having an errata for the Gaining Grounds 2017 packet, so that's not as common. So it's a bit more have more variety to the whole thing.
Trey?
Ever since I heard about this problem and saw it in action, I thought that something needed to be changed because of that negative play experience. But since I've kind of sat back and looked at it some more, I think that it gives those crews a great benefit, and it would be one of the reasons that someone would play them. But like you said, it's such a corner case and it pops up so rarely that I don't think it needs a change. I think if anything, they should maintain that benefit of being immune to conditions, but maybe put in some sort of fact or something of that nature that says if the entire crew is immune to conditions, then the master loses that immunity or something like that, just so that it makes those schemes possible.
Okay, cool. Mark?
Well, seeing as I just bought Hamlin and Ashes and Dust, I hope it doesn't go away too soon. But yeah, it's definitely doing it to where you know you're basically insta-winning on that, at least, victory condition. It's a little overpowered for especially a tournament setting.
All right, rebuttals. Back up to Adam. Adam? Oh.
Maybe he had to go poop. Sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah.
So I was saying, while you couldn't hear me, apparently. the hardest thing that you can have from a standpoint on this, so a really bad scenario if you're facing Outcast would be something like Accusation being in the pool. Oh, what's that one?
Mark for Death and Talem.
Yeah. Like if those pop up, those are 3 out of 5 that are impossible to accomplish against a Outcast player that knows what they're doing and hires Hamlin. The other two are the two you're going to choose if you are a knowledgeable player playing against an Outcast player. So from a Hamlin standpoint, you're like, okay, well, I know the two schemes you're taking. And it removes the element, which is a strong element of Malifaux, at least in its current tournament format, that you have no idea or less of an idea what your opponent has taken against you. If that pool include, if the pool that pops up against you has at least those three, you know the other two that a good player is going to take against you. Because if they didn't, then they're already down 3 or 6 points on the scoring mechanic, on the scoring point. So I guess I do like the idea of levying, and no pun intended, levying for the idea or a I guess I don't have an answer. I don't want to provide an answer to Weird. I want to have them understand the problem and they can come up with a very good idea, a resolution on it, and that's usually what they do. But I think presenting the problem that there is in a certain scenario, 3 schemes that are nearly impossible, they are impossible to score against a Hamlin player, and finding a resolution for that, whether it's an errata, it actually wouldn't be an errata, I don't think. I don't think the way Weird does things is going to be errata, but having it be an FAQ thing or a change, honestly, a change to the Gaining Grounds 2018 booklet would probably be the best way to resolve this without making a change to cards. Is probably the best way forward. Making it in that document saying that any abilities or actions or what, and I can't enumerate them all right now, but basically abilities and probably actions that can remove conditions that are not for scoring purposes cannot be blocking or removed from a model, then they don't count. So, you know, however the legalese wording would come across, I think that would be probably the best way. Deal with it the next 6 to 8 months and, you know, grow a pair and play game alpha. I mean, if you face Outcast, expect Hamlin in those pools and just deal with it.
So mean. Jeez. Yeah, I don't have a strong enough opinion on this to say that I don't mind waiting it out until 2018. I'm sure they will They're going to shake things up in a nice way for 2018. I just really don't also want them to nerf Iron Sights, because obviously I have a very soft spot for that model, and I'm opinionated in that way. Hello. Also, just a point of interest, if for some reason they do flip Mark for Death and Talem and Accusation, then one of those two schemes you have left is Claim Jump, and that's not exactly an easy thing to do against the Rad Engine.
No, it is really hard.
You're trying to max out on 7 points at that point. All right, that's all I have to say. Dave?
Not a whole lot on this. Just, yeah, if there's... I actually kind of like that idea of if no models can take conditions, at least the master can take conditions, would be an easy fix. Just for scoring purposes. I think that would be a nice, easy fix in an FAQ or something that would tide us over until 2018, at least.
Trey?
From all the conversation, I think the only change I would want to make is that Iron Sights can take conditions.
Thank you! Can't... Wait, what?
No, I already said my piece.
I'll find out where you
look what you've done, Doug. Look what you've done.
I've created enemies. Well, let's go on to Mark. Trey, you're out of the Cup podcast.
Well, see ya, Trey. I don't got really anything to add besides marginal points.
Okay, well then let's move on. Keep this train a rolling. The Allison Dade issue, specifically the model Allison Dade, which I think has just come out, has a trigger or an ability. I believe it's a trigger that lets you see your opponent's hand. This was, again, brought up on a weird place. It, basically asking for what can you do within the what's considered proper etiquette for the game. And they were asking if you could, like, write it down, or if the person should just play with their hand reversed, basically. Or take a picture. And I'm pretty sure I already know everyone's opinion on this. But we'll still go down the list. Top of the key, Adam again.
Alright. This one's pretty hilarious. If someone wants to record my hand, they need to have a good enough memory. If they want to write it down, I don't give a crap. I am not leaving my hand open for them to look at. I don't care if it's in a casual or a tournament venue. So, hey, I mean, if you want to write it down, go for it. But if you're going to take 5 minutes to write down my hand, I'm going to call delay game and whatever. I mean, I think it's ridiculous that someone even asked this question on the forum. Like, if you don't have a good enough memory to play Malfo, then you shouldn't have a good enough memory to know what someone's hand is when they show it to you. So, that's my stance on it.
Okay. Mark?
I kind of agree. If you, you know, it's an action where you get to see the hand, you don't get to, you know, it doesn't say anything about recording it. It just says you get to see it. So, if you can't remember it, I feel like that's on you.
Okay, Dave.
So I just went and looked at the actual ability. The opponent has the choice to reveal the hand or just discard the marker. Either way, you shouldn't have a chance to write down exactly what each card is. If you see I have two 12s and a 13, that's probably enough information for you to really plan out your next few turns. But anything past like a reveal for a couple seconds, go, here's my hand, take a look, and then take it back. That should be all you get out of a zero action from what it looked like.
Trey?
I think it should have the same rules as your discard pile in your deck. You have to keep a rough memory of what's going on in the game. So you take a peek at their hand, you like you guys have already said, you see the important cards and then you move on.
Okay. My opinion is basically mirroring everyone else. Yes, it's not really in good taste to write that down or take a picture or whatnot. Malfo seems to be very, like, even when you get into the real meta-heavy and winning crowd, there's a bit of... How do I explain this? don't be a dick. And that seems like something that a dick would do, even if you're not doing it intentionally, to be a dick. Yeah, writing it down seems kind of like a dick move. It's like, oh, I'm that concerned about every minutia of this game that I'm going to make sure I know exactly what cards are in your hand. It's just not... I think, in general, it's not really how Malifaux is played. And obviously that is a very subjective opinion. Rebuttals! Adam! Adam's dead again.
Very muted his mic again.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, I was agreeing. Can you guys hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah, I do. I think it's a subjective opinion, like as far as what you do with the knowledge. Let's just take a second to specific, because I mean this is a specific instance that someone brought up on whatever the forum was.
A weird place again.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. You know, the crybaby zone, as I like to call it. So let's look at that action. It's a tactical action, number one. Number two, it has a TN. And number three, it has a range. And the range is pretty good. Can't deny that. And also, the recipient of this action also has a choice. So there's a few things that go on in this process for this action to occur, which then would resolve in you potentially having to show your hand. So up to that point, you've decided whether or not showing your hand is relevant to your opponent or not. And if it's not relevant, then hey, guess what? It doesn't matter to you whether or not they note it down. But the point is, I think that Malifaux has a lot of really dynamic interactions that a key element of the game is the card mechanic. If you can keep track of, and I'm not, again, we've talked about this before on another topic, but I'm not talking about counting cards. Yes, is that something you can do in this game? Yeah, it totally is. Is it worth it? Honestly, I don't know that it really is. The game actually benefits people from using their resources in a beneficial way to accomplish the mission at hand. So in this particular situation, if someone knows your hand, that means you're allowing them to know your hand. And if they know your hand, either you have done it, it's occurred at a point where you don't care because you've already spent all your really good cards, and they know that probably, or you haven't spent your good cards, and now they know you have two 12s and a 13. Okay, that actually doesn't change the math of how you accomplish the things in the game. One thing about Malifaux is, something I try and instill in my new players is, if you want to do one thing this turn, there are cards and stats that you can do that with if you brought the right crew that cannot be stopped, right? Attackers have the benefit in Malifaux. If you're a defender and you tie and you're tying the attacker, you're losing the duel. Those are things that is important from a mathematical standpoint. So, hey, I showed you my 13 and my two 12s. I still know that those three cards are going to beat the three things that I know I need to happen in the game against your other three models or other three actions. So I don't care that you know them. Now it just makes it harder on you because you know that I have that stuff. So go ahead and record it down. Don't record it down. I don't care. I think that this is a it doesn't matter situation. It's more of a, why does somebody really need to write it down? Write it down. I don't care. I think that the idea that this topic even exists is hilarious to me. I've never heard of this topic being a discussion point. So I think it's crazy to have the discussion on this.
Okay. Mark, rebuttal? Anything?
No, just what I had before. Not much to add.
Dave?
Yeah, pretty much don't be a dick. I mean, if you can't remember a couple cards after seeing them briefly, then you probably got other issues with the game.
Trey?
Nothing else.
I don't really have much opinions either, but this brings up something that you know is just going to happen at some point. Two players are going to get into a fight because one player revealed his hand to the other player, and the other player didn't think that the person let him see his hand long enough. And then they're going to get in a shouting match, and then someone's going to have to intervene.
I didn't think we had 12-year-olds playing this game.
It's...
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a few 12-year-olds out there. I'm saying this is going to happen at some point. You know, you know it is.
But is that a person you're going to care about playing a game against? Like, does that matter to you, really, in the long term?
Really, no. I'm sympathizing with the TOs that have to separate them. And then determine how long of a time is appropriate for someone to look at someone else's hand.
Yeah, okay. So, someone does that. I'm the recipient of someone I'm telling them they have to show me their hand. They show it for half a second, and I go, "Oh, can you show it to me more?" And they say no. I'm like, "Okay, cool." You know, like I honestly I don't think it matters because like that sets the tone for how they want to play the game, and I will just play my game the way I'm going to play it because I just don't think it's a problem. I think it's more of a personality issue. It's not a game problem. It's a personality issue.
This is probably going to be really mean, but what you need to do is, as a TO, just have a couple decks of Yu-Gi-Oh cards sitting in your bag. Just pop them out and be like, hey, give me your Malifaux models. This game is probably more your style. And then I'd probably lose my henchman status, but whatever.
Are you discussing the Allison Dade thing?
Yes, we're discussing the Allison Dade
thing. Can I jump in really quick?
Real quick.
Just really quick.
Yes.
It's probably not against the rules, but it makes me feel really icky, somebody talking about writing down my hand or taking a picture of it.
No, your actual hand. Yeah. Yeah, that's nice.
You knew what I meant.
It's gross. Okay, I think we're all cool with moving on a bit to our last required topic, which is Weird is ending its pre-sale of figures for its Black Friday and Easter sales. I've seen quite a bit of lamenting and quite a bit of congratulating on the behalf of people to Weird, but let's get everyone's opinions, starting with Mark.
I mean, I haven't had a chance to buy or pre-order even anything from Black Friday yet for anything. So, I don't know. It'll be a new experience regardless for me either way.
Mark doesn't care. Trey, do you care?
Yeah, I think it's a great thing. I don't even know how to say it, but I think it's a great thing for the stores because it'll give them more ability to make sales because that's how people are going to get models. But unfortunately, I think people aren't going to the stores right now all the time anyways. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. But I do think it comes at a bad time because a lot of people are looking for those new Wave Masters and such that are now not going to be in the Easter sale that so many people have been looking forward to.
Yeah. Dave.
That's pretty much exactly how I felt. If they would have had this last sale and then announced it, I think it would have gone over better. But I get why they're doing it. I just hope by doing so, it'll help fix their distribution chain so that they can get these models out faster to stores rather than having to fulfill all of these sale orders first and then sending to stores. So that's hopefully a positive that'll come out of it.
Yep. Adam, sorry. Thoughts?
Yeah, no, I agree with you guys. I think it's a tough time to do this. From our perspective, and I say that from the fan base perspective, something I just want to note is that in general, the fact that Gamma just happened, something that Weird is really good about is talking and contacting and being in touch with the distribution and retailer base. I guess somewhat anecdotally, I have a new store that opened up near me, and I've been trying to, and I'm associating myself with them in general, they have a small Malifaux presence from a on the shelf presence. Great presence when we play. We play every Tuesday. We're there. We have at least 4 to 5 players, and we had a tournament this past week. So like as far as player base, totally great. But from a sales standpoint, not that great. And it's not actually because product doesn't sell. It's because, number one, everyone that I play with knows the Weird sales life cycle that you're going to have a Gen Con, a Black Friday, and an Easter sale. So if I miss something at Gen Con, okay, I'll get it 2 or 3 months later. If I miss something at Black Friday, okay, I'll get 4 or 5 months later. And I think people are okay with that. But when they go to a store, and it's not the store's fault, but the store says, oh, yeah, I'll put that order in. I had a new guy that I just met this past Saturday. I was running a tournament, never met him before. He's there playing board games. He's like, oh, yeah, I love Malifaux. I've been wanting to play it. And I go, oh, wow, that's awesome. Like, what are you interested in? He's like, oh, I put an order in for, I think it was the Latigo Posse 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I'm like, oh, so why hasn't it come in? He's like, I don't know. I come here every week. Saturday, we play weekly and talk to the store owner. She says, yep, I've checked on it. The distribution doesn't have it available. And she's like, I have no way of making that happen. And so there's this problem where distribution doesn't make it available. The gamers of the people who are entrenched in Malifaux know that it's going to be available for the new releases and for any release, really, of any product that Wyrd sells via their sales, that there is a big disconnect between making something available and having it available, that it just doesn't benefit those retailers. So I think this change is healthy. Is it in the long term probably best for company? I don't even think it is. I think it's actually detrimental to their sales. They claim it's not, but we'll see in the long term. So I would love to see one thing that one of my locals mentioned was that they would like to see the availability of, so a Gen Con release, let's say, so let's go back in time. Let's say the Titania box, which has been a sought after box, even though, you know, competitiveness wise, not the greatest. The Titania box hasn't been available. It hasn't been available till I think this month. But what if it was available through the event kits? Right, event kits are a way to get people into stores. You can't get an event kit unless you're running something out of a venue. So to have the idea that maybe pre-release or allowing pre-release product in event kits might be a new way to bolster the event kit system, because right now it's kind of boring. I don't know how you guys feel about that. It's probably a topic of its own. But it's been about 18 months, and everyone knows what they're getting in those event kits. It would be nice to maybe see, oh, wow, there's a Arcane Emissary in here. There's a Shadow Emissary in here. There's a Titania box in here. Oh, Titania's that out? Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. That's a great drop into an event kit. So I like the way they're going, and I think it's actually better for the product, I guess, the product being available to stores. But is it going to be better for the company? I have no idea. Time will tell.
Doug's turn. Hooray. Yeah, I'm in agreement that this is a good thing. And I would think Wyrd would make sure that this wasn't going to hurt their sales, at least not a whole ton, before they decide to say this is happening. But we're also we'll at least have Gen Con to get our pre-models. So we have that. But I guess I never really terribly liked pre-sales in the first place, because for the person that's just kind of short on cash at that time, but they are beholden to the rule that a lot of us have where we can't play the model until we get the model. We just don't proxy. So that person that just couldn't afford it during that sale window has to watch other people fielding this model that they want to play with, but they can't really do that until it comes out. It sucks. It's something I had to go through. Thought it's kind of in tangent with the prize kits that I'm hoping happens now with this, is that people are going to be buying less during these Wyrd sales. It's going to happen, obviously, because, you know, a big draw is the pre-sale models, and they're not reducing the price in any sort of way. So people are going to be buying less, which means they're going to be giving out fewer of the alt sculpts, alt sculpts is a general term, which means that those alt sculpts become rarer, which means that finding them in prize kits is actually going to be a bigger draw than it was before. At least this is what I'm hoping happens, because I'm of the same opinion that kind of we're hitting a prize bloat where a lot of the things that they're giving out just aren't that appealing to a lot of folks. And they've got to jazz that up like the way they need to jazz up the Guilders program. Now, my one thing that I know that I really want Weird to do in this situation is because they're not selling the pre-sale models anymore, upkeep their upcoming release page a bit better instead of this sort of random update schedule they have, because we're out of March, and March is the latest month they have on that page right now. It's a little frustrating. Okay, that's my opinions. Mark, anything else?
No, I have anything to add.
Trey?
Nothing. I agree with all the opinions.
Dave? Dave?
Just give me Amina. I want Amina.
Oh yeah, I'm excited for her whenever she does decide to come out. Maybe it'll be this month. We don't know. As in April.
Oh, that'd be so nice.
Adam.
Real quick, I totally agree. Update their site on the coming releases, please.
Well, I tweeted them and they said they were going to do it real soon, so at least we'll get new stuff soon, but I think moving forward they need to be on that a little bit harder than they were before. Excuse me. Alright, finally on to the optional topics. Hopefully we'll get to... What? Who wrote who back to the other side and why? Who did that?
Not me.
I added a question.
Yeah? Oh, okay.
I didn't know where it should go. It can go at the bottom, I don't care.
That's what. All right, we're just gonna skip that for a second. Give me at least a chance to think about my opinions on it. Gonna go down to the most underrated stat or ability in the game. Keyword underrated. This should be fun. All right, turn five. We're gonna start with Trey. Trey, what do you think is the most underrated stat or ability in the game?
It's funny, I was sitting there reading that, trying to figure out what I was going to choose, and I was like, God, please don't let me go first. But
if you really need to, we can skip.
No, I think, I don't know if it's underrated or not, but I find Hard to Kill as a very powerful ability that people sometimes just are like, yeah, whatever, it has Hard to Kill.
Yeah, and it's really, really wonderful. Actually, it's very, very enjoyable for me, because I like playing a lot of Hard to Kill models. When you're on two wounds, and someone like flips really high to attack, and you're like, yeah, sure, go ahead. All right, I get plus flips. Oh, look at that red Joker damage. Okay.
Still, yeah, it happens one to me a lot. I love it.
Excuse me. Sorry about that. Adam, you're next.
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry, I didn't hear that you asked me for me.
Yeah, okay. I didn't hear anything either.
Yeah. I would say this is one that I think people realize is good, but doesn't come up enough. And so when it does, it becomes a big deal. Impossible to wound. There is no way to ignore impossible to wound. Right? It is one of the key abilities in the game that there is nothing that stops it. I mean, if there is, it's brand new to me because I don't know of any of the four books. Yeah,
nothing yet.
But there's no way to stop impossible to wound. And if you're a good player, you're usually holding the cards that you need to get to a straight flip to then hold out and hit that, you know, severe, or if you need it, only moderate damage or red Joker damage. Well, if you want to kill a Teddy and you want to have, and you're holding the red Joker, it don't matter, because that is the worst time to hold the red Joker if you want to kill Teddy, because it ain't happening. You cannot cheat against Teddy with it's impossible to wound. So that's mine. I mean, there's probably other better ones, but the first one that came to my head was impossible to wound.
Cool. Thanks. Dave. Are you guys not hearing me?
This is a tough one, but it's probably just more because I was completely run over by Ulix, but 1 AP charges seem mighty, mighty good, considering he wiped out my mages with a single war pig and just bounced between three different models.
Ow. So this comes from a salt standpoint?
Yeah, probably a little bit. I couldn't think of a better one, but just though from recent experience, that seemed quite damaging, and I don't really know how to defend it when he can summon two war pigs on turn one and then just fire them in and pinball around.
What faction do you play?
Arcanist.
Oh, man. Colette.
I need to learn her. I don't know her very well.
You could probably bring a decent amount of disguised models. That would help.
Yeah, and I brought the wrong list for that game anyways, but I was just extra salty with the two war pigs just bouncing around back there and killing everything.
So, a quick... impose a little bit of knowledge on you. So Colette, if you end up start playing her, don't forget that her hooked cane can attack her own models and auto-trigger costumes, which makes it all friendly models within 3 inches may not be targeted by the charge action.
That seems helpful.
Yeah, and the damage put on it is 1, 3, 4. So if you do it against, say, a Corphy or a Corphy Duet or, I don't know, any other stuff that you have as armor with a mannequin, you're pretty much always doing 1 damage and auto-triggering disguised on you, yourself, and every model within 3 inches.
Adam, are you telling me there's things on Colette's card that aren't prompt?
Yes.
That's it. It's impossible.
Bullshit. I call bullshit!
That just happened. Chain auto-trigger costumes is pretty baller against anything that requires to win a charge. For example, I had to face Colette recently with Asami. 1 AP charges are kind of Asami's thing. Well, costumes is sort of annoying against that. Or disguised, or any of that stuff.
Doug, we talked about the errata. Corby. They removed prompt from Colette, remember? And they added a whole new card.
Oh yeah. Amazing. Forgot about that.
The more okay. You know.
Are you done with your saltiness, Dave?
That's it. That was what I had, but apparently I just played the wrong masters for it.
Well, now you know, obviously. Mark!
Something that I recently played against, the Voodoo Doll's Hem. It's the, I mean, I guess it's used in conjunction with, what's her name? Zoraida with the Will-O-Wisp, I think they're called.
Yeah.
You know, being able to summon that Voodoo Doll way away from Zoraida, and then it has a 7 cast, 10 range attack, and you can just pile all these conditions on this stupid Voodoo Doll. And, you know, if you guys have something with burning, I can't remember what the guy was taking, but basically I had nothing beast, and this guy hemmed him first turn, and I had to burn the Void Shield in the first turn because I had 7 burning and 4 poison and 5 straight damage on the first turn.
Ow.
So, it was just ridiculous.
Will-O-Wisps are pretty awesome.
Wait, what was that?
I said the Will-O-Wisps are pretty awesome.
Oh, okay. I thought you said Lilith. I was confused. I don't see anyone playing Zoraida. I mean, she's definitely not something that shows up in our meta.
You don't take Lilith with your Zoraida?
I read the rules.
I couldn't pick that up at the Easter sale.
All right. Okay. We're into Doug. I think this is the topic I came up with because I'm excited. Something that I know is good, I think everyone knows is good, but people just don't talk about as much as I think they should, is a 3-inch melee range is baller. What's up, Adam?
No, I wasn't sure. Is this your ability or...
Yeah, this is mine.
Okay, all right, cool. No, that's a good one. I like it a lot.
I absolutely love it because you just take up a whole ton of space. Everyone just picturing when they look at the board and they just sort of picture in their head, someone's reach, what the area they threaten or they can lock people into engagement with is about 2 inches. Even if they know something has 3 inches, they just don't see it with 3 inches. So you're often catching people by surprise. You also tend to have a really far charge, regardless of what your charge is, because you're stacking 3 on top of that. And just a very simple technique, which is a whole bunch of fun, is you basically can hand out a pseudo slow just by positioning. You just walk up to someone with your 3-inch range that doesn't have a 3-inch range, and there's most models don't, and you just keep them, you keep yourself outside of their 2, and now they can't run away without having to try to beat a flip. They can't attack you. They have to spend at least 1 AP walking towards you before they can punch you. And I think that's just wonderful. It's one of the few times I allow myself to be kind of a jerk. I mean, it's in the game rules.
Yeah, no, that's a good one.
And then, you know, if you're lucky enough to have a wide base, plus 3-inch range, you're taking up like a quarter of the board just by yourself.
Unless it is Shadow Emissary, you don't care. Two inch claw range or 7-inch range, no guns.
Jeez. Okay. I guess anything additionally that you can think of besides your initial idea, starting with Trey.
I don't have any other abilities to add, but I did want to mention that 3-inch melee range. Not only is it OP because of its range, but also when you're shooting it into an engagement, you don't randomize for models that are more than 2 inches apart, regardless of engagement.
Well, you still technically have to randomize, but you're not going to randomize onto your own model. So you could randomize on... You could, if they're balled up, in a way, you could engage the first model in that sort of ball. And then if you shoot that model, then you can possibly randomize onto other targets.
Yeah, I was just saying for 2 models. If 2 models are engaged and they're 3 inches apart... That melee model with a 3-inch range can still hit the other model, but you don't have to shoot your own model on accident. It's amazing.
It is amazing. Just FYI, we ran out of time about a minute ago, so let's finish up this round. Adam, any other thoughts?
My last would be Free Corps armor or Free Corps suits, I think.
Ooh. Yeah.
I think it's...
Freikorps.
Freikorps, yeah. The Freikorps suits, I think, in general... Are...
There's no P. There's no P.
Yeah, no, they're amazing. I think that when you don't have it, you're like, oh, this doesn't matter. But then when you have it, you're like, it's really good. So, I mean, Freikorps deny a lot of the Neverborn stuff. They deny a lot of the strong guild lists. Yeah, I say Freikorps suits. Awesome.
Oh, it hurts me the way you pronounce that.
Yeah, but you actually say it wrong, so it's okay.
But don't you dare, sir.
Oh, you do, actually. It's actually Freikorp.
There's no P.
No, I said Freikorp.
It's
a soft P.
There's no P.
There is a P. It's right there.
They stole the word from the French, like we did.
It's German?
It's yes, a German word.
The word is German, but they stole the word core. The word core itself, they took from the French.
Anyhow.
I know what the topic is next week.
Steam-powered scoundrels, episode Rat King and Voodoo Doll.
Yeah, we went over that. Dave.
Yes?
Do you have anything else to say as an underrated stat or ability?
Charged Leap also really bit me in the butt this past tournament. Just couldn't hold down models. They just kept jumping away.
With, like, Von Schill in the suit?
Yeah, this whole episode's kind of been pooping on Outcast in general.
I'm sorry, Outcast players. Excuse me. Okay, Mark.
Yeah, honestly, off the top of my head, I cannot think of anything else that's, like, super underrated.
Okay. And I'm just going to wrap it up so we don't waste any more time. We're not wasting people's time. No one's getting their time wasted here. But that is the end of this episode. Thank you all for lending your voices and your thoughts and opinions. And your Friday nights to Friday Night Foedown. Thank you, Trey.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you, Mark.
Dana.
Thank you, Dave.
Anytime.
Thank you, Adam.
Thank you.
All right. And thank you, listeners, for listening to us. Have a good night. Bye.